Homeownership has always been a part of the American dream, and it's the biggest investments that many people plan for in their lifetimes. However, there is one demographic that isn't sold on this dream. Millennials are now delaying the purchase of their first homes as the affordability gap widens between home values and income levels. I'm Christy I, and you're watching The Cost of Everything, where today, we're going to be taking a look at the housing market, its affordability, and the rising trend of tiny homes popping up for those who want a minimalistic lifestyle. So what does it cost to own a home in 2023? What is causing this decline in home ownership in millennials? Well, home ownership is declining amongst millennials, not just in the US, but everywhere around the world. The home ownership rate fell to 63% in 2016, the lowest rate in half a century, and down from the all-time high of nearly 70% by the end of 2005. The likelihood of owning a home by the age of 30 increases for those already married with children. But today, younger people are in no rush to wed and have kids, and now the median age for a first marriage is closer to 30. Student debt is also another factor in explaining the decline in home ownership. Average debt at graduation is currently around $30,000, up from $16,000 in the 1990s. But while the cost of owning a home is high, at a median price of $425,000 in the US, how much does it actually cost to even just build a home? Just a home, not the real estate, which is where most of the cost is from. The average cost of building a new home is actually between $50 to $400 per square foot, depending on the cost of material and how fancy you want to get with the marbles and tiling. So you can actually build a house on a budget and have a 1,000-square-foot home completed for under $50,000. But even if the cost of an actual house is merely $50,000, depending on the location and the real estate value, that same house could cost over $500,000 because of the area, the city, and the neighborhood. So because of the outrageous cost of real estate is putting a burden on the younger generation, many are looking to tiny homes. Tiny homes are living quarters that are usually between 100 to 400 square feet, made trendy by icons like Elon Musk, who lives in a 375 square foot prefab tiny home. The tiny homes market is set to grow by $3.57 billion between 2022 and 2026. A survey discovered that 86% of respondents would move into a tiny home due to its affordability. And tiny homes also allow people to travel and pick up your home and take it with you, bringing along all your personal belongings. This is especially popular among millennials who already have high student debt. Baby boomers who are retiring also find tiny homes appealing because of their reduced expenses and portability and ease of downsizing in their later years. Many are also finding these tiny homes to be trendy as they are extremely energy efficient, made with insulation technology utilizing LED lighting and solar panels. Tiny homes are compact and able to be shipped anywhere, with the goal of promoting a more sustainable way of living and making housing drastically more affordable for the world. These tiny homes all have completed kitchens, bathrooms, electrical, plumbing, and HVAC completed in factory before it's shipped out. So when it arrives at its final destination, the home just needs to be unfolded, attached to the foundation and utilities before it is ready to be moved in. Not only are these tiny homes affordable for consumers and eco-friendly for the planet, they're also time, cost, and labor efficient to create homes in factories rather than individually designed and built. And these could potentially solve many of the housing shortage problems in certain parts of the world, as factories can churn these out effortlessly in less than half the time it takes to build with the help of an automated and standardized process. So now let's bring in Jason Hartman, Chief Executive Officer at Empowered Investor. So Jason, which country still has the most affordable housing and what policies are in place that allow it to be still?
Well, you know, some of the wealthier countries have quite a few social programs that help with housing costs and so forth, but those markets are generally very expensive. And, you know, we see some of the less developed countries, of course, have much more affordable housing. You know, Central and South America, lots of affordable housing. Mexico, of course, you know, certain places in Asia and so forth, and Eastern Europe, housing can be very affordable in these places. But again, you have to take into account and adjust for the size of housing, the quality of the housing, and that varies quite dramatically by country.
And are there subsidies in some of these countries that allow for these affordable housing?
Yeah, the subsidies take place in the wealthier countries. You know, you'll see more of those in the United States, the UK, the more developed countries. They'll have various housing subsidies. Some have rent control programs and so forth, but rent control is usually a fake affordability. it seems like it makes housing more affordable, but what it really does is make it more expensive in the long run because it creates shortages and scarcity, and it never really works long term, but initially it sounds good and gets politicians elected.
Now, what country has the least affordable housing and why are the global housing prices so high to begin with?
Yeah, well, you know, as you would imagine, Christy, the more developed countries where there's lots of wealth, lots of money, some Western European countries, certain markets in the United States, very, very expensive. Of course, Hong Kong, very expensive, and Singapore and so forth, all the usual. These countries just have a lot of currency units. In the U.S.'s case, dollars. It might be the yen, the euro, whatever it is, whatever the currency unit is. A lot of currency chasing a limited supply of housing, and especially in the areas that are either geographically constricted, Hong Kong would be a good example of that, or the areas that have massive environmental restrictions, and California would be a good example of that. Wherever you cause a shortage, either by policy or by just natural land barriers and land masses or oceans, you have a concentration and unbuildable markets where housing gets very, very expensive.
Now, what do you make of this tiny homes trend? Do you think it's a good idea or do you think it is more glamorized than it actually is?
You know, it's an interesting question, and I think it's sort of nostalgic and maybe cute. I don't think it's a long-term trend. I think it's kind of fascinating. You know, a lot of the tiny homes are portable to one degree or another, and I think millennials have been very interested in that. A lot of them are built around small, tiny home communities. Of course, the minimalism trend is you know, a reaction to usually parents that were the opposite of minimalist. You know, they had homes full of junk and garages full of stuff and all of that. But I don't think it's a long-term trend. I mean, it's very hard for people to live like that, especially if they want to grow a family. They obviously can't live in a tiny house very effectively.
Absolutely. And if we're talking about single family homes, is the trend these days to build bigger or build smaller? And is the average square footage actually getting smaller now?
Well, you know, in the 1970s, the average home size was about 1,500 square feet, and today it's about 2,300 square feet. So, and I'm talking about the U.S. home size. So you've seen 157% increase in home sizes, right? So it's a very significant difference. And when people try to say housing is so much more expensive it was today than it was for your parents or your grandparents, that's sort of true on its face, but when you really drill down, it's actually much less expensive than people think when you adjust for inflation and home size and home quality. Real estate, at least in the US, is really not that expensive overall. But to answer your question more directly, the McMansion trend that was largely a baby boomer trend, I think that one has faded. As energy costs increase, upkeep costs increase, I think you are going to see a lot less demand for McMansions, especially as economic times get tougher and people become more conservative and more careful. And a lot of those McMansions are built, right? So there's more than enough supply of big, giant, oversized homes, and much more than people will need going forward in the future. Obviously, people aren't having children as much, and demographics have changed. And so there's just a whole bunch of reasons that we have an oversupply of what they call McMansions.
Yes, absolutely. And Jason, is there a way to tackle the world's homeless problem? Obviously, it will differ country by country, but currently there is about 150 million homeless people in the world. So how can this problem ever get solved?
Well, it's a bad state of affairs for sure. And one of the things we need to do is look at it as a mental health problem, because a lot of it is just really a mental health and a drug abuse problem, unfortunately. But beyond that, it's an overall economic problem of people that were formerly middle class or lower middle class people who don't have savings, and a couple of bad things happen, an emergency happens, a medical problem, a car repair problem, a divorce, and they are on the street, maybe living in their car. So, you know, they're not homeless on the street, but they're living in a car. And we're seeing that a lot more, unfortunately. One way to tackle the problem, other than fixing what I talked about already, is just to loosen up on the building regulations and the environmental regulations that make it harder and more expensive to build homes. We have reached a point where it has become so expensive and so difficult for developers to build that is making housing just much more expensive than it needs to be. Our homes today are constructed like tanks. I mean, I live in Florida, and my home is unbelievably sturdy because it has all of the new hurricane codes. And most of that really is overkill. And it makes the cost of construction very, very high. Letting people build on more land, not reserving so much land and not having such strict zoning requirements would make the market more accessible to more people.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, Jason. Jason will stick around, because when we come back, China has a far different problem when it comes to housing. We'll have more after the break.
We need to counter the Russian state control narrative.
Als Teil der Sanktionen gegen Russland gehen die westlichen Länder gegen russische Auslandssender vor.
Mais écoutez, monsieur, c'est pas à vous de décider de qui est journaliste ou pas dans ce pays. On est en France, quoi, c'est pas possible.
We will ban in the European Union the Kremlin's media machine. The state-owned Russia Today and Sputnik.
RT, Sputnik, even our video agency, roughly all banned on YouTube.
Et merci à vous tous pour votre fidélité et votre soutien.
Welcome back. We are discussing the cost of housing. Meanwhile, over in China, they have quite a different problem. While they have no shortage of housing, citizens have bought these properties for speculation and investment purposes, driving the cost of real estate up and pricing out many of the low middle income citizens. China has around 65 million homes standing empty in 2020, which, to put it into perspective, is enough to house the entire population of France. But while these apartments stand empty, most of them are actually owned. Apartments are rapidly bought up by homeowners who have no intention of moving in, but to use as an investment vehicle. The side effect has been these so-called ghost cities in China. These are metropolises that have yet to come to life as the property market deteriorates. Some of these cities are yet to be completed, while others are fully functioning but with very few residents and not enough tourists to fill up the shopping malls. These home buyers believe that time is on their side and that these cities will fill out over time and that the home values will just keep rising. However, China's house prices have plummeted in the last 12 months as the property crisis is made worse by the pandemic sweeps the country. Home prices in 100 cities fell for the 6 months in a row in December as developers are hit by liquidity squeezes, delaying the completion of many housing projects, which further undermines buyer confidence. China's housing regulators are struggling to reinflate the property bubble and keep housing supply and demand balanced by making home prices stable and strictly curbing speculation. However, UBS Group estimates that the Chinese real estate crisis will cost the banking system as much as 1.5 trillion RMB on loans, bonds, and other assets. This would translate to roughly $682 billion in housing activity erased. In Europe, the real estate market has been struggling since 2022 on the back of the pandemic disruption, an energy crisis, increasing inflation, and tightening financing conditions. Swiftly rising mortgage rates have drastically reduced home affordability at a time when home prices have already reached unsustainable levels in many European countries, especially as higher energy prices and inflation further erode disposable income. But even as Europeans are being priced out of their home real estate market, more Americans have been relocating to Europe, driven by the rising cost of living, inflated house prices, and the surging dollar back at home. Italy, Portugal, Spain, Greece, and France have been the most popular destinations, with requests from Americans looking to move to Greece rising 40% in the summer of 2022. Compared to the US, Europe provides relatively cheap housing, particularly in smaller cities and towns. The rise of remote work has also made Europe more attractive, particularly to millennials who are priced out of the US housing market. In Europe, the average sale price of a new residential property in the UK was the most expensive in 2021 at 4,900 euros per square meter, followed by Austria, Norway, and France. Meanwhile, Serbia had the lowest average sale price at 1,520 euros per square meter, followed by Portugal, Latvia, Poland, and Croatia. That compared with the US, where the average cost per square meter would cost over $17,000. And it's no wonder why so many are relocating to Europe. And for more, let's bring in again Jason Hartman. So Jason, what happened to the giant real estate corporation Evergrande in China? What was the fallout from all of that?
Well, in one word, debt. That's what happened to Evergrande. And, you know, the fallout continues. We will see how many of those buyers end up with completed homes or recovered deposits. It does not look good. To some extent, there was a sort of a version of a Ponzi where, the company's being financed by people putting in deposits and so forth. But debt and a cooling market and just being on the wrong side of everything, that old saying, a rising tide floats all ships. Well, companies that don't make sense and are really dysfunctional can sort of hide a lot of that in a market where you've got demographics going in your favor and interest rates in your favor and the general market and economy in your favor. But when those things turn, they can become very, very sensitive to any minor changes. And that's one of the things we see over and over again, not just with this company, but with lots of different companies.
Absolutely. And now, Jason, the property market has contracted by as much as 7% year over year, causing it to become a significant drag on the Chinese economy. How does this affect everyday Chinese citizens who actually spend a significant portion of their wealth investing in these properties?
Well, you know, in China, it's very interesting because the market, due to the one-child policy in the past, has become so really imbalanced in terms of males and females. And if a man wants to find a partner, wants to find a wife in China, he has got to own a house. And, you know, we've all heard the stories of the Chinese ghost cities and people buying houses that they never live in and so forth. You know, China does not look good in terms of its demographics. It has a major demographic problem, and I don't think it can really recover from this. It's going to take a few more years for this to play out, but unfortunately, it will continue to be a drag, in my opinion. And with all the great stuff China has done over the past couple of decades, which have been truly amazing, no one would deny that. It is now moving into a time where the population pyramid, as demographers call it, is imbalanced, and there just aren't enough young people, and the birth rate is so low, it has just completely crashed. There are not enough young people to pay for older people. And that's what has to happen in every society. You have to have children to pay for the people who are aging out of the workforce. And unfortunately, many countries have this imbalance pyramid. It's not just China. Japan has already experienced it ahead of China in this way. Russia, Western Europe, but China is coming right into that situation over the next few years.
So how does the imbalanced and demographic affect the housing market and subsequently the economy? And you don't think this downturn is nearing its end anytime soon. You think it's going to get much, much worse as the bubble bursts over the next year or so, right?
Oh, yeah. I think it's going to get dramatically worse. China has had a great ride, but things have changed. It is over largely. Now, the saving grace could possibly be some great technological innovation. I mean, China is doing a lot of things right in terms of investing in infrastructure, artificial intelligence, the Belt and Road Initiative, et cetera, et cetera. In investments, spreading its footprint in Africa and developing projects there and so forth. But the old saying, demographics are equal destiny, right? And you just cannot fix a demographic problem that is this big and this severe. And, not to mention the authoritarian government and the bad PR of late, there's just a lot of headwinds in China.
There are, but how do you think China is trying to fix the many crises they have right now, the housing crisis, the demographics crisis? Are they doing anything to fix it?
Well, they are trying, and unfortunately, it's just too little too late. With the demographic issues, you simply cannot fix those quickly. I mean, obviously, we all know how it works, right? Couples have to get together, they have to have children, those children take a long time to grow up, and they don't really become very productive until they're into their mid to late 20s, and that is a very long wait. So China is way behind the curve. And of course, Japan, it's further ahead of China in this bad way. Russia, same situation. So you just cannot fix a demographic problem. It's an unfixable problem. Unfortunately, it has a multiplier effect when demographics are going in the way that people are having too many children and there's not enough resources for the population growth, but it also has a reverse multiplier effect, and that's what we're experiencing now. It's an unfixable problem.
Thank you so much, Jason, for joining us today. It's hard to say who the winners and losers are when the real estate economy varies so drastically from country to country. But overall, it seems like the younger generation is losing, as so many are priced out of owning a home due to the rising cost of living and wages not keeping up with inflation. Rents are also rising faster than wages, making it hard for renters to save for a down payment. This means that more than 9 million home buyers in America have been priced out of the housing market. On the other hand, millennials also value mobility, so they shun against the traditional model of putting down roots too early on before they have established their careers. They are the primary drivers of the tiny homes trend, which makes home ownership more affordable and offer unique experiences. They provide convenience and quality over size. And these tiny homes offer a nomadic lifestyle for millennials working remotely and as they view it as a new kind of rich, where experiences are valued over material things. But while tiny homes are catching on, many still view this as a fad. For one, a tiny home built on a trailer isn't real estate, even if you own the land that it's parked on. Tiny homes on wheels are personal property, and like other personal property like cars and RVs, they depreciate over time. Real estate, on the other hand, usually appreciates over time. And in the event that you want or need to sell your tiny home, finding a buyer won't be easy as the target audience is very niche. I'm Christy Yai. Thanks for watching, and we'll see you back here next time on The Cost of Everything.